Hello and good morning, everyone.
Thank you for coming on this final day of a conference at 8:30 in the morning. It's quite the trek to get here this time. My name is Chris Mullins. I am on the Bosch Framework team. I am one of the engineers on the team. I've been on this team for about 2 years now. I write code every day. For those of you who look at some of the new things we have coming out, like the C# V4 SDK, a lot of that code is mine. A lot of the tools that we demoed last year and again this year, part of those I've written. I've been building bots going back to the days of IRC, XMPP, all of the messenger apps that came in between, and most recently, conversational AI. So I'm co-presenting today with my friend and coworker, Darren Jefford. Darren, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning, everyone. So my name is Darren Jefford, recently joined the team, but actually been working really closely with the team over the past couple of years, actually helping some of our customers actually build the first wave of these conversational assistants, and providing some great feedback and scenarios. And actually, some of the things we'll show today are kind of us kind of listening to some of that feedback and actually kind of making things easier.
Thank you, Darren.
So for those of you who were here last year, we showed a bunch of numbers. Those numbers have gone up in every dimension. So we're seeing more companies, more developers, more bots, more messages. Across the board, bots, the hockey stick graph for bot growth it continues. So before I get too much further, how many people here have actually built a bot? Either with our stuff or one of our...
Okay.
Excellent.
Cool.
How many people here have built bots in C#? How about Node? How about Python? Java? Sweet. So for those of you who don't know, we're going to be talking a lot about all four of those languages today, and a lot of the services and tooling that comes with that. So we have customers with the bot framework all over the world. We're in Australia, Asia, Europe, Africa, North and South America. We have the compliance bits that you need to be able to use this to build your bots all around the world. We have the language supports in Lewis. We have local data centers. The odds are really good your company, as it sits today, is able to build using our stuff and check all the boxes that you need for your enterprises. So today, we're going to start pretty basic. We're going to start off with what's a bot. Because it turns out many people are still confused as to what they are. Then we're going to go through kind of how to build a bot and what some of the tooling is like around that. Darren's going to spend a lot of time talking about how to make bots more intelligent. And then we're going to talk about some of the things coming in the future, where Jason Williams is going to come up and present Conversation Learner and some of the more future-looking AI techs that we're playing with. Darren.
So kind of one of the great places to start when talking to customers and kind of developers around kind of breaking down, you know, the whole kind of bot architecture is really focusing on the end user. So actually, obviously text-based input is the kind of typical input that we all kind of default into, but it can also be speech. And we're now starting to see the first wave of speech-enabled experiences. As well as being able to, you know, sort of upload images actually as part of a conversation to maybe kind of help with pre-filling a form. But also it's really key to make sure that these conversational assistants show up in the channels where your users are actually spending time. So actually writing that bot once and maybe making it show up in Skype or Facebook Messenger or kind of web chat. But we also then have kind of the bot intelligence kind of box. So this is where we bring in these kind of AI capabilities, which we'll kind of touch on kind of throughout the talk, where we're bringing in language understanding and translation and Q&A maker. So these are kind of standalone components we're kind of bolting in to increase the intelligence of your bot. Now, a key thing to bear in mind is when you're writing a bot using our kind of platform today, under the covers, you're effectively creating a web service. So actually integrating with APIs and kind of data sources are just as they would be with any web app or kind of web service that you're building today. And you have the Azure platform under the covers providing all of the good security and kind of logging things kind of throughout. So in terms of breaking things down, we have the Bot Builder SDK, which helps you actually as a developer author these bots, help you kind of manage dialogue and some of this conversational kind of logic. And we spoke about these AI services. We have the cognitive services platform. So you'll have seen a number of these kind of demos in the keynote and so on. So key ones being language understanding, taking a particular phrase and understanding the intent of that. But also things like text analytics for sentiment and Q&A maker, which we'll kind of cover. We've also got this new concept of called the dispatcher, which we'll kind of talk on a bit later. And this is kind of helping us actually better take a question and actually figure out which bot or which language model should actually process that utterance. So we, one of the scenarios we've seen with more complex bots is actually trying to figure out where to send that kind of question to. So the dispatcher is a great way of trying to find the right place to go and process that. It's worth bearing in mind that whilst the various canvases that we kind of spoke about, a key question we've had in the booth a lot this week has been, great, I can do this in web chat and put it in my mobile app, but I want to go and embed this in my own experience. I have a WPF app, or I have a sort of a mobile app, whatever that is. Can I actually embed in directly? So yes, you can use something called Direct Line, which allows you to kind of send and receive messages directly, you know, separate to the various canvases that we support. So we kind of break things down. As I said, the Bot Builder SDK is kind of open sourced on kind of GitHub. You can go up and go and get started quickly. There's a bunch of samples in there, and actually Chris will take you through building a bot from scratch by taking one of the templates and getting up to speed pretty quickly. We then have the Azure Bot Service, which is again helping you plug in these various kind of intelligence services. And as I said before, these channels are the really key aspect. Another part that's kind of quite overlooked is you can write your bot once and you're insulated from all the differences of the various channels. So if you want to expose on every single channel, or one or two or three, it's a configuration setting. And then we, as in the Azure Bot Service, actually will then manage how do you talk to Facebook Messenger? How do you get messages and convert them from their schema into another schema? So we kind of protect you from that complexity. So in terms of intelligence, we've spoken this kind of about this a few times. From a Lewis point of view, the language understanding service, you don't need to be a data scientist actually for any of these capabilities. So as a developer in the room, you can take the language understanding service. You can go ahead and create a number of intents. So an intent would be things your bot can do, like booking a flight or finding a restaurant. And you type in a few examples to actually help train the model with different ways humans may express that question. You can also bring in some of your data. So if you've got brands or restaurant names or city names or whatever those things are, you can actually add those entities in to help improve detection. So one of the examples I always like to use, I could create an intent around booking a restaurant and actually bring in one of the date time entities we have. And I could then say, hey, book me a restaurant a week on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Now, as a developer, parsing that string and figuring out the intent and also figuring out a date time from that fairly complex kind of string is quite hard. Lewis would just do that for you. It would tell you the intent and actually give you a date time or some candidate date times if it's kind of a bit fuzzy. And you'll see more about Lewis. Azure Search has been kind of the core of some of our best bot experiences, where you've got documents and unstructured content, being able to kind of reason over that and try and find some information alongside Q&A Maker. But actually, one of the retail bot scenario that we'll give, if you have a catalog, for example, and you want to bind your conversation to this catalog so you can find products that are of a certain brand or a certain category and less than $1,000 or whatever, we can actually bind that conversation directly to Azure Search, and it's greatly kind of simplified some of the build of those experiences. Now, it's absolutely key that a bot can do things, so tasks or intents, but also have knowledge. So be able to answer more general questions like, what are your store opening times? What's the telephone number? What's the return policy? How do I contact you? Whatever those kind of that general knowledge. A good bot experience can do things, but can also answer more general information. So Q&A Maker, as you can see, as you'll see later on, is a great tool for being able to harvest some of that information out of documents, for example. We can also get into speech, so the ability to wire up speech into these experiences as well. So actually, if you use the web chat control, there's kind of native support for this. You give it a speech key, and you can go ahead and kind of talk to it. A key feature that, again, is overlooked is something called speech priming. So that's where you can take the words about your products, for example, from the language model and bring across into the speech engine. So that dramatically improves recognition, because we've all probably had speech experience where you mention a product name and it doesn't quite get it right and comes up with something in the dictionary. So speech priming is a really easy way, and we've had some really good results of doing that. Yeah, understanding who is speaking is another one. Translator will show, so actually being able to allow anyone to speak any language without you having to do any extra work, and we'll show how that works. And custom speech, you saw some elements of that kind of in the keynote, so that's the ability to train a custom model to remove background noise if it's in an airport or a kiosk. And again, that dramatically improves kind of recognition. So another key aspect to a really good experience is actually integration into APIs and that either you have or that Microsoft has across our various properties. So actually the most common bot scenario with many customers today is actually around internal bots, so employee self-service, finding information, HR policies, whatever those things are. But actually wiring in the Microsoft Graph is where it really gets interesting. Because you can start to actually help people find people with certain skills, for example. So you can actually broaden the reach of your bot in this case by bringing in the Microsoft Graph. So again, you can bring in Office 365 and Dynamics and LinkedIn and bring in that information to end up with a much better experience. Now, this has been slightly complicated to do until now. So any of you that in the room, actually, hands up who has had to add authentication into their bot experience? Okay, a good number of you, which is good. So was it easy? Probably not. So I wrote some of the first engagements we did. We had to write libraries to go and do this. There's been various kind of packages out there to try and simplify it with magic numbers and so on. So actually, one of the features the team is actually announcing this week is natively, if you go into the Azure portal with your bot, you've actually got the kind of OAuth configuration setting. If you want to auth to GitHub or so Azure Active Directory, it's a drop-down list. You put in your keys, and you add in a couple of lines of code, and all of a sudden, when you try and actually access something that's going to require calling to an API, you'll get a challenge. So you'll see this video, which is probably already played. So let me just go back. So where the experience works, what you're going to see is someone, oops, let me try that again. Oh, it's not letting me pause it for some reason. Here we go. So actually you can see on the right-hand side that actually the user's asked the question, show my GitHub repos. So actually Lewis in this case is going to understand that the user wants to access some information in GitHub. So it's actually going to need to authenticate now to get that token to actually then go and pass to that API. So with any luck, you're then going to see automatically with the new authentication support, it's actually issuing a card saying, actually you need to sign in. So the user's going to go ahead and kind of hit that button and sign in and do the various authentication codes and all those good things. And what you'll next see when that signs in, what you would see if I just skip ahead in the video, so you can actually see that it said, thanks, Jeff. It now knows who that user is and has actually gone ahead, called the API, passing the token for authorization and actually pulled that information back. So with a couple of lines of code, a bit of configuration, you can now go ahead and add authentication to your bot. So anyone doing any bot development should find this a big kind of step forward. So that's great to see. Over to you.
Thanks. So one of the things that we've been doubling down on this cycle is really improving the overall life cycle of a bot, defining that, working with that in your life cycle, in your SDLC. And as part of that, we've created tooling, we've got command line tools, we've got integrations with the Azure command line tooling and Ibiza to get all of that tooling working. Now, there's a session later today put on by my friends Elaine and Vishwak that's going to delve a lot deeper into this. They're going to show a lot of these tools with a lot of depth behind it today. For right now, this is just a quick overview. But what we're going to talk about here is as you start planning things, when you walk up and start on a bot, you've got to design your dialogues. This is the life cycle that we've seen with the web once upon a time, with mobile apps. You can't just walk up to a bot and expect it to work because people don't have the mental model yet for how the conversational UIs work. So we've got this transcript infrastructure now that works in the emulator. You can design cards, you can design dialogues in that. And you can visualize that. You can load that transcript in the emulator. You can show it in presentation mode to give the people you're working with a real feel for how your bot looks. We have lots of tools for building bots, of course. We have the SDK, the C# V3 SDK, and the Node V3 SDK. Those aren't going anywhere. Those have been out now for a year. Those are still maintained. Those are still getting new features added. The OAuth bits that you just saw were added last week. We have all kinds of tools for adding intelligence. We have Lewis, we have Q&A Maker. So the building bits we've had for quite some time now, and those just continue to improve and iterate. Testing, we have a new emulator, and Vishwak is going to show this in the session today. I believe it's at 2:30, it might be at 3:30. He's going to go through and show, we have a plugin model for the emulator now. So you can show visualizers in there. You can actually improve your Lewis models from within the emulator as you're looking at flows back and forth. We're going to show some of the integrations with App Insights. We're going to go ahead and show some of the DevOps tools to get building and publishing your bot to work so that a lot of your SDLC now can be more what you're used to having. You can script a lot of this. You can store, for example, Lewis files in whatever source code control system you like and pull it out and start setting up things like continuous deployment. We, of course, have all the information to connect your bot to everything from Skype to Teams to Cortana. And lastly, with the AI aspects of this, we have a lot of the active learning and evaluation phases, where you come into Lewis and you look and see, what are people typing? How did that work with the intents I defined? Darren's going to be showing the dispatcher in just a moment, where you look at, if you have all these different conversational models, what overlap is there that you may not have anticipated? So to build the bot at the most simple layer, the first thing you do is you choose a platform. And today it's C# and Node, if you're on the V3 stack. As part of this kind of preview today, we're showing the world what we call the SDK V4. This is a preview. We're trying to do this very transparently. This is on GitHub. It's been on GitHub now for about 6 months. We have C#, Node, Java, and Python, of course. And we're trying to align them very closely with each other. So there's one set of documentation, one set of patterns. But first, step one is to pick what platform you want. Once you have a platform picked, you go ahead and get started. We have Yeoman templates, we have Vizix templates, we have all the things that you would expect to kind of jumpstart that and make that go very quickly. We also have scenarios that you can go download code for. Those are sitting out on our website. And lastly, you deploy your bot using the Azure Bot Service. You can deploy this locally to your machine if you want. You can do this to your own private clouds. And as part of all of that, we have this command line tooling. We have what we call MS Bot, which I often call Mrs. Bot because it looks like Mrs. Pac-Man to me. We have the infrastructure there to take your bot, connect it to Azure, connect it to Lewis, to edit your model, to do all the things that you would expect to be able to do from a command line. We also have this thing called Lewdown, which obviously is a play on Markdown, where you would define what your Lewis models would look like. So in something that looks a lot like Markdown, you can edit this in VS Code, you can edit this in Notepad, you can check this into GitHub, you can do whatever you like with the file. And then we have a tool that will take that file and turn that into a Lewis model for you. So it becomes very maintainable from a command line tooling and file format perspective. Lewis, of course, now we have a nice command line tool to import these things, export these things, and train and publish them. And of course, we're integrated with Azure much more deeply now, so you can do AZBot create, or AZBot publish, or AZBot, you can edit all the different features and settings there to really integrate with the SDLC that your company is using. Has anybody been waiting for these tools? I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't been there as long as they have, because it's made my life difficult. So having these makes everything I do a lot easier. It integrates with all the best practices, integrates with all the Azure infrastructure, everything just kind of starts to come together now. And as I said, there'll be much deeper demos of those later today. Vishwak will stand up here for probably about an hour and walk through every one of those tools in great detail. If you'd like to learn more as well, feel free to come by the booth and we can demo them there. So once you've built your bot, you've designed a chat experience, and you've started connecting into things, one of the things that we see is you need cards. A lot of people are expecting cards. Some bots obviously are great with natural language, some bots are spoken, but the combination of touch, talk, and type really requires the ability to adapt to the canvas that you're on. Right? So we've got these things, they're called adaptive cards. We've had them for about a year now, although they've come a long way in the last few months. This is an open source project, this is on GitHub, these are open standards. The renderers for these are also open. You can render these natively on iOS, on Android, on Windows, and a dozen other platforms. And what this does is defines a JSON document that says, this is what my card looks like. And then it's up to a renderer to say, what does this card look like on Teams, or in Cortana, or in Android, or in Windows Timeline? And it lets you, the bot developer, not worry as much about the pixel-perfect bits, but when your bot is viewed, for example, through Cortana, it should look like the native Cortana experience. When it's viewed through Slack, it should look like a Slack experience. When it's viewed through SMS, we'll down-render that to a bitmap for your users. So getting those cards out there helps a lot. They also support SSML, for those of you who do any work with speech, so you can start adding intonation and all of the things that come with SSML. So the last bit here, I'm gonna hand it back to Darren, who's gonna talk a lot more about Lewis and language understanding.
Great, thank you. So language understanding, kind of touched on this already. A key part that's kind of, again, overlooked from a Lewis point of view is absolutely it goes hand in hand with kind of bot creation. But it is a separate cognitive service. So actually, why wouldn't you, or why couldn't you, actually take a desktop app that you're creating or a website and actually have, you know, a text box at the top, where instead of a user going through and clicking through tabs and forms and things, they could actually just express what they would like to do and actually have the app then go and actually go and perform that. So one of my kind of favorite examples at the moment is around travel booking. So that this kind of example where recently internally we had a new kind of travel tool rolled out kind of internally. And the user interface is exactly as it would have looked like 10 or 15 years ago. It's got a where are you going from, where are you going to, a date picker control, and all the other kind of complexity. So actually imagine a scenario where you could write a bot for travel booking, or you could have a box on your website where the user could just say, hey, I need to book a flight from London to Seattle. I'm going to stay in Bellevue, and I'm going to leave a week on Tuesday and return on Friday. And actually, in one kind of fairly simple kind of utterance, you've actually provided all the input data for that application to go and do that work. So again, Lewis can be kind of plugged in kind of wherever kind of makes sense. Again, you don't need to be a data scientist. You can just pick it up and build a language model. You can bring in your data and kind of train that. And you get a web service endpoint that you can pass the question to and actually get a response back. It's also got that kind of that ongoing kind of supervised learning kind of aspect where if I'm asking questions and maybe the language model doesn't quite understand in the early days of your testing. So it can actually capture those questions, and as an administrator, you can go into the portal and actually look at some of the questions that that maybe the language model hasn't understood in the correct way, and actually retrain the model, publish it, version it, all of those other good things that you would expect. So in terms of kind of there's a bunch of new features, but kind of touching on the enterprise kind of aspect. So it's now, you know, GA, so it's reached the kind of generally available kind of milestone December last year. It has SLAs, it has kind of multiple pricing tiers. It was one of the big questions in build kind of last year of actually, well, when's this going to go GA and when can I get, you know, higher sort of reduced throttling and things. Another key aspect is around compliance. So actually, there's been a number of changes around the cognitive services, around GDPR and so on, which has actually really changed the conversation with many of our kind of customers who are maybe slightly concerned that questions that were being sent to the Lewis endpoint, you know, Microsoft was using that to retrain our algorithms and so on. So actually, there's been a number of terms and conditions that have changed across the cognitive services, which means that is no longer the case. We are a data kind of processor, not a controller. So actually, that's unblocked a number of customers who are nervous around using the cloud and calling these various cognitive services. So that's moved a lot of things kind of further forward. 12 languages are supported, 13 different Azure regions, so you should find it in the region that your solution needs to operate in. So talking a number of kind of new features, you know, from a speech point of view, before you had to go in and kind of manually do that speech priming. That's where you're improving the speech recognition by extracting the utterances and entities from your language model. So that's now kind of automatic, and there's been some unification around the keys there. Another one is sentiment. I think every bot, I think, that we've created, we've wired in a number of cognitive services in addition to Lewis. So we used to wire in the spell checker. So every question that came in, we call the spell checker to make sure that we are, yeah, correcting any spelling mistakes. So that's now integrated into Lewis, and that was done kind of last year. Another one is sentiment. So we would call the text analytics cognitive service to actually understand the sentiment of the question. Is it negative? Is it positive? Maybe the bot will respond slightly differently. So that's now just a checkbox, and you'll see that in the demo today. And the same thing around key phrase extraction. And again, I'll show that. That's all just integrated. So we've got a number of languages that we support. I think it's 12 languages. But actually, we've now got the machine translation aspect where, with just a couple of lines of code, you can actually target any language. And I'll show that kind of interactively. Again, these were things you could do before, but they required you to write the code and get extra keys and do all of that kind of jumping through hoops and so on. From a core language understanding, there's been a number of improvements that kind of are now available. Patterns is one, where you can actually teach the language model some patterns of utterances to improve recognition. So the example that you'll see a lot speaking about is if you're trying to understand information about your organization and you want to say, who does Chris Mullins report into, or who does Darren work for example. And actually, you can train all these kind of various utterances, but you can sometimes get confusion. So you can actually provide a pattern and say, actually, if I'm saying I want to fly from London to Seattle, you can provide some examples around the origin and the destination, which improves recognition. So there's some great documentation explaining some of those examples, so it can reduce confusion. Also bringing in regular expressions natively. So again, instead of having to train it with all of the entities as part of your training, you can actually put a regex in and get that to extract kind of product numbers, for example, from utterances and do that more reliably. And key phrases I'll show kind of in a minute. So again, this has been quite key for Azure search scenarios, where if I say, I want a new Microsoft laptop, now, if that's going to go off to a search tool, then I want A is going to appear in a lot of things. Those individual words will appear all over the place, and you'll end up with slightly odd search results. So key phrase extraction is a technique to take that question and pull out kind of the key phrases, which improve search. So translation, you can see a great example here of a bot that's been written in English. The language model is in English. The data is in English. And actually, by bringing in translation, as you kind of see on the top right, and Chinese and kind of French in this case, we're doing translation of all the cards and all that information coming back. It's also a little bit cleverer than that. I have had the pain of writing manually translation support. And actually, you try and be too clever and automatically switch languages, and it doesn't quite work out. But there are also some things you don't want translated. Don't try and translate my name or a product name from one language to another. So again, you can provide some sort of markup on utterances, and that will tell the translation implementation not to translate this portion of a phrase. So let's actually bring this to life. So number 7. We'll see if the demos are going to work. So a couple of things to kind of show straight away. So hopefully you're generally familiar with Lewis. So I have a model here that is a kind of a generic kind of white label demo we have around a retail kind of bot experience. So I can say I want a Microsoft laptop for under £1,000, for example. So this uses Microsoft store data. So what we should see, if the demo is going to work, is it's found one laptop that's actually under £1,000, and it's brought back an adaptive card and so on. So this is the Lewis model that's kind of under the covers here. And if we go ahead and look at entities, one of the entities that I added ahead of the demo is the new key phrase entity here. So again, you go and add that pre-built entity in, and it will automatically identify the key phrases in any utterance and kind of show that to you. The other thing when you publish your language model, so you can all go and do this today. So you can see here there's a checkbox for sentiment analysis. So if you want Lewis to take every utterance and give you an idea of sentiment, is it positive, negative, give you a score, it's now going to do that automatically for you. You've also got the speech priming support there, right there. And again, this has been there for a while. You can also bring in kind of the spell checker kind of aspect in here. So if I go ahead and just show that working quickly. So if I go ahead and say, I want a Microsoft laptop for under £1,000. So this will just show you the raw response from Lewis in this case. So you can go ahead and see this is the query here. It thinks I'm finding looking to find a product, and this is the score, which is pretty high, which is good. If we scroll down, you're going to see we've got some entities here, a list entities that I've got. Obviously, I typed in want incorrectly, but anyway. As you can see here, the key phrase is actually picked out is Microsoft laptop. So it's removed the I want A out and given you kind of the key phrases. So if you're going to go off, do a search, it dramatically improves accuracy. It was a kind of a key improvement in one of our projects that we did. And down here, you've actually got the sentiment analysis here. It's giving you a label. Is it positive sentiment? And actually giving you an idea of a score even. And if I say this is terrible, then you can see negative sentiment is actually kind of being returned here. So again, not rocket science. Again, you could go and do this before and plug in components and call keys and do all that kind of manual management. It's now just a checkbox as part of kind of the Lewis kind of processing, which is quite cool. So one of the other aspects I wanted to talk about is one of the learnings from a number of these bots that we've built is as they get more complex, is you can sometimes end up with slightly strange results that you give it to a user and they ask a question and it goes off to the Q&A maker source or it goes down an intent that it shouldn't have gone down. And I spend quite a bit of time with kind of customers and you're looking at their language model and go, well, why is that? If I look at the training data for these intents, it looks quite reasonable that it should go down here. Now, why is it getting confused and doing something else? But you can also get situations where people, maybe you've got a business person adding questions into Q&A Maker, and they're actually causing overlap. So they're putting questions over here that are in the language model and causing kind of slight kind of confusion. So in order to, and that leads to a situation today where end users don't get the outcome that they want. So actually one of the dispatcher tools that I'll show now actually allows you to evaluate your Lewis model and make some best practice guidance actually to say, actually, this intent doesn't have enough utterances. Or you've got the same type of question here in this intent and actually over here in this intent. So it can help guide you on how you can make some pretty straightforward changes to your language model. But it will also bring in Q&A Maker. So it'll actually bring in the questions from there and the language model and do a set of kind of cross validation and testing and actually identify where there's overlap and ambiguity in areas that you can go ahead and improve your model. So actually one of the things when I found out about this kind of a couple of months back, I went back across all the projects we delivered, harvested all the kind of Lewis models and actually ran it through the tool. And overall, they were pretty good, which was a good thing. But there were a number of really straightforward changes that noticeably improved kind of accuracy, which actually, unless you have users testing at scale, you find it really hard to actually kind of test. So the demo that I'm going to show is a kind of a bunch of command line tools. So in this case, I'm going to initialize, use the dispatch command line tool. So I'm going to create a new dispatcher instance. I'm going to provide my Lewis key, my authoring key in this case. So that will do that. So the next thing that I'm going to do is add my Lewis model. So I've said the type is Lewis. Here's the ID of my model and the version to use. And it's gone ahead and added that. If I then also go to Q&A. So I'm going to add a Q&A instance. I'm adding the knowledge base ID and the key. So go ahead and do that. And I'll go ahead and create the dispatch model. So this will again create a model from all the various utterances and questions. It'll go through and do that work, and it does take a little while. So here is one I created earlier. So you can actually see a summary here. So this is just a summary that's created. And there's some top-level guidance around, you know, there's duplicate utterances between the language model and the Q&A. So actually there's some duplicates that you should go and remove, because that's going to cause confusion. Especially as the language models evolve over time, as you do more and more training, then the scores are going to adjust over time, and suddenly you could get something going down one intent versus the other intent. So it's kind of giving you a heads up around that. It's also saying there's a number of intents where the utterances, the training data isn't high enough, and yeah, some other bits and pieces. But I can go ahead and actually look at duplicates. So in this, It's, in this case, we've got a, you know, an utterance called hi, which is actually trained in the language model, but it's also trained in the Q&A model. So actually, as training evolves over time, it could start to go down Q&A or actually go down the language model and have different results. So it's highlighted straight away, an easy change to make. Also ambiguous. So there's a question. I would like to install new software. How can I do this? So the expected intent is the language model. However, there is a Q&A score, which is pretty high. So again, you're likely to get, you know, an sort of ambiguous response. There's also misclassified. So this is actually highlighting questions or utterances that are going to go down a route that was not designed. So I've trained this question to go into the Lewis model. But because of confusion with the Q&A maker instance, it's actually now going to go down Q&A maker versus actually the Lewis model. So actually, it's just making it really easy to understand that the expected intent was the language model, but actually it's going to go down the none intent. And in this case, it's expected to go to Q&A maker, but it's actually going to go to like a find product intent or something. So this is a great tool that I encourage any of you that are using Lewis today and kind of Q&A maker. It's a couple of command line kind of entries. You can get a bit of a health report of your language model. And again, we've had, you know, good results straight away. And I'll talk more about the dispatcher later on. So I think that was everything from a Lewis point of view. Yes, translation, good one. So the other aspect, and Chris will show the new bot framework V4 and middleware components, but I've got a simple bot here. If I go ahead and start this, this is just an Echo bot sample that I just pulled down from the Visual Studio templates. So I can go ahead and just say hi to this bot with any luck. And it's just going to echo back and say, you sent hi. So I can say good morning, and it will say, you sent good morning. So, and this is the new emulator, by the way. So. Which you're seeing here. So actually, if I go ahead into Visual Studio, so in order to add translation into my kind of bot experience, before, again, you could do it. You had to write a fair bit of code to go and do it. But I'm going to add a new translation NuGet package. And actually, I'm going to add a using here for the new translation support. And there is one line of code here that I'm going to add. So this line of code is adding a new component into the middleware. So any messages coming in are going to go through this kind of component pipeline. And we've got a translation middleware component. We're going to say the languages my bot supports, which is English in this case. Here's my translation key. And the last parameter is whether the translator should translate messages going back out. So translating messages into the bot, should it also translate responses? So I'm going to go ahead and say false for now. I'm going to go ahead and build that. And let's run that again. So what I should now be able to say is good morning again. And it should just work as we would expect. But what I should be able to say, just wait for it to spin up. She sent good morning. So I'm now going to say good morning in German. That's pretty much the only language, other language that I know. So I can say good morgen. And you can actually see the translation middleware has translated that into good morning kind of automatically. So two lines of code, we've added translation. So if I go back and change to translate responses and recompile, what I should now be able to say is good morning. And it should now translate the response. There you go. So it's actually done the translation into German. So actually, this is a very simple implementation where we're just seamlessly switching languages. The documentation's got the steps to allow you to maybe train a set of questions like, I'd like to speak in German, and it will just seamlessly switch across. And it's also got the support to stop you translating people's names and product names as well. So it's a really nice implementation and kind of shows off kind of the real power of the V4 kind of framework. So it gives you a sense of how you can broaden the reach of your bot and your data without you having to do any translation work. And with some of the new neural network kind of improvements with a translator, you know, translation across a number of languages has got significantly better like in the last sort of 6 to 9 months. So it's definitely worth checking out. Chris.
Thanks, Darren. Thank you, Darren. So one of the things that we are showing today is what we call the Bot Builder V4 SDK. So for the last year, we've had V3. That is a GA product. It is released. It's open source. There's hundreds of thousands of developers using this every day. We get support. We have a complete ecosystem around that. However, in the last year, we've also seen a lot of feedback around that. This needs to be more modularized. The C Sharp and Node need to be more aligned. We really need a Python version. We really need a Java version. So we went back to the drawing board, and we created what we're now calling the Bot Builder V4 SDK. And that is in preview today. It's been available on GitHub, if you knew where to look, for the last couple months or so. And that is really designed from the ground up for extensibility. Darren just showed an example of that. He dropped a middleware plugin that walked through the pipeline and did translation for you, both in and out. That's one example of how this new system is extraordinarily extensible. It's also modular. We looked at what makes really successful frameworks, and as part of that analysis, we really decided packaging and the ability to just pull in the dependencies I need and really clean lines of dependencies between them was a key component of this. So we've gone ahead and built this completely modular. So we have strong alignment between packages across all the platforms. We have strong alignment of concepts. We have the same middleware pipelines across everything. And lastly, we have Java and Python now. Now, we're leading the design work in C Sharp and JavaScript at the same time, and we're fast following that in Python and Java. So the bits released today that you can go play with are richer in C Sharp and JavaScript now, and in the next few weeks, you'll see Python and Java come up to speed much faster. Now that we know we've solidified a lot of designs, there's not as much churn going on there. That is a genuinely open project. You can file issues, you can submit pull requests. We're trying to do this as transparently as possible, and we would really love feedback. There's areas in that SDK that we think are right, and there's areas like, for example, maybe some state management that isn't quite as right, and we would love community feedback on the best ways to do this. So please take a look. The stuff, it's a GitHub, botbuilder.net, or botbuilder-js, botbuilder-python, botbuilder-java. And you can go hit those repos now and take a look. Like I said, I would love feedback on there. We're triaging that every day. And community support is the best way we will end up with an amazing product here. So one of the things to drive on that extensibility for a bit is middleware. You know, we looked at ASP.NET Core with its middleware solutions. We've looked at Express. We've looked at Restify. We've looked at Redux. And seen the ecosystems and the integration that middleware gives you. And we took the same approach here. There was no need to invent. There was no need to do something new. So we took the same approach to middleware for all these protocol handlers. So now adding a new feature, be it logging, exception handling, analytics, translation, is as simple as adding in the new middleware component into the pipeline. And this is an example of the JavaScript one, adding pretty much the same thing Darren just showed in C Sharp. One line of code, some keys, you're good to go. Now, you can pass in far more. You can pass in options and defaults and everything else. But that's just one of many middleware components. Writing these is very easy. In fact, most of them, frankly, are only a few lines long, which is great. And the power that involves, because they're so stackable and modular, is really, it's been transformational. We've been doing hacks with this around the world where kind of an organization we called CSE would bring companies in and customers in to hack on this to get initial feedback. And the middleware bits have been where integration with other systems has really been powerful. This has let them integrate with existing analytics tooling, with everything that they have at their company. So to go with that, we have a new emulator. The emulator is still an Electron app. It still runs everywhere. At its core, nothing has changed for that. But now we have a lot more features in there. We have a full plugin model here so that you can start building visualizers for these things. So that when you click on, for example, some data that comes back from Lewis as part of your bot, you can actually edit and manipulate your Lewis model there. We have all kinds of activity tracing here. So if you, in your bot, you're doing the equivalent of printf statements or debug write lines or what have you, those will now be sent to the emulator over an out-of-band channel, and the emulator will surface that to you. So the old printf-style debugging is actually practical again, which is always a nice thing to have. The emulator supports chat transcripts, it supports looking at things, it supports multiple bots. For those of you who are trying to launch multiple emulators at once and have multiple conversations with a single bot, this is now a tabbed approach, so you can have as many conversations going with your bot as you like. So after Darren's demo, mine, they're a bit anticlimactic, but I think that's actually a good thing. So I was going to show you really quickly here, if I can bring my laptop up. Let's see if that comes up. Which one am I on? 8. So here we are in Visual Studio. Actually, let me cancel this. Let me start completely fresh. Get started. So this is Visual Studio 2017 with nothing unique installed. So I'm just going to go File, New Project. This is the easiest way to get started building a bot in C Sharp. For those of you in Node, we have Yeoman templates. For those of you in Python and Java, those are, for the most part, coming very soon. So Visual Studio supports VizX templates. So from getting started, all I did is I came over here and set online. And I usually scope this to just be bot-related templates. And you can see the Bot Builder V4 template that we just released. And say OK. You can wait a moment. So that's going to create me the world's simplest bot, right? This is just an echo bot with a little bit of state management so that I can count turns. But that pulls in all the right NuGet packages. And we can see here, we come up here over dependencies, we can see it pulled in our ASP.NET Core. This, by the way, is ASP.NET Core 2. This is .NET standard. So all of this bits will run. So at that point, we have an echo bot. Let's go ahead and just run this. Let's do nothing else. I haven't changed a line of code yet. So as soon as this comes up, clearly this is a reason I have to tell my boss I need the bigger, newest Surface Book. So now, I'm going to come over here and copy this URL. This can actually be improved because the emulator now does support kind of URNs, so we can actually build the trigger in here, the click and do it. We just haven't had a chance to do that yet. I'm going to create a new bot configuration. I'm going to call this my demo echo bot. I'll put my URL right here. I'll not worry about anything else. I'm just going to save and connect to it. We can save it right there. So at this point, I should be able to say hi and have that echo back to me. So the emulator is now connected. We can click on things. This inspector, as I said, is fully pluggable. We have plugins now for Q&A Maker, for Lewis, for a bunch of other things. It's also possible to write your own. The emulator itself is open sourced on GitHub. It's Bot Builder Emulator, if memory serves. So take a look and feel free to submit comments, issues, and even PRs against that. I wanted to take a quick look at the code. So this is my full echo bot. So this is the template for building a bot. This is deeply integrated with ASP.NET Core. So all we've had to do here is have a class that implements iBot that in turn just handles turns, right? The turn of conversation is the utterance back and forth. So all we've done here is said, hey, if the user sent me a message, echo it back. And the only lines here that are kind of tricky is get conversation state and turn count. So what that implies all by itself is that we have a way to manage state. You can either deal with that yourself if you choose, or we have middleware components under the hood that are running that you can turn on or off to do that for you. So in this case, we have a turn count variable, and all we do is echo it back. And to give you an idea of what that state looks like, that is my state management class right there. That is just a plain old C# object, no methods, no nothing, just managing state. We have state managers today for in-memory because it's the quickest to get started with, but obviously it's not very durable. We have file-based ones for very simple getting started scenarios. We have Azure storage. We have blobs, tables. We have a Cosmos DB one. It's also very easy to write your own. The interfaces are pretty well factored. So you can go ahead and build your own storage infrastructure if you have something you need to use yourself. So that is my most anticlimactic coding demo ever. So now let me come back here to 5. And Q&A Maker is one of the ways we are enriching these bots to make them smarter. Because echoing, as much fun as it is not probably not going to impress your customers as much as it impresses me.
So hands up who's used Q&A Maker previously Well, most of you. So hopefully this will all be good news for you. It's announcing general availability of Q&A Maker kind of this week. So it's been a often asked question of when's it going to be GA, when are we going to have higher kind of limits and so on. So it's no longer has kind of the throttling or the quota limits that it had before. A key change, which is driven by kind of customer feedback, is before it was kind of like a software as a service thing. You go and create Q&A Maker, you add your questions in, and we store it somewhere, and we use kind of search technology. So actually now, when you go ahead and create a Q&A Maker instance, and I'll show you this in just a moment, you actually go and do this in the Azure portal now, and actually it creates an Azure search instance, so it's now using Azure Search, so actually that's helped improve some of the search capabilities. But it deploys Q&A and Azure Search and a few other storage components into your Azure subscription. So you have control over it. It's not kind of hidden away in some kind of Microsoft element. So from a compliance point of view, kind of a really important kind of change there that you own that kind of aspect. And also just native integration, as you would expect, a bit like the bot framework of Application Insight. So you get good insight into what's going on. So cool. So just to show you where Q&A Maker kind of now shows up. So if I go ahead into the portal, I can go ahead and search for Q&A Maker. And you hit create. And just like any other instance in Azure, you go ahead, choose your subscription, the pricing tier and things, and the app name. And it goes ahead and creates that in your tenant. So if I go ahead to Q&A Maker, so the portal still exists. So once you've created that initial instance, you can go ahead into this portal. And I say, I want to create a new knowledge base. And it actually takes you here to the Azure portal. So I've already done this. So now I'm going to select the my Azure subscription. And you'll see I've created a Q&A instance before here. You give it a name. So I'm just going to call it Build Demo 2 or something. And again, just like before, you can add URLs, and actually we'll go and grab FAQs out of it. Part of some of the new capabilities are around better PDF support. So a lot of you that have used Q&A Maker before, it had this great promise of being able to take a document and be able to harvest out those questions and one click and away you go. And it worked great for some documents if they were really well structured. But if you gave it something that was a bit more real world and kind of human readable, then actually it wouldn't do as good a job around actually extracting that. So actually one of the things I want to show you live, so you know that this isn't kind of made up. I'm gonna go ahead and I've selected some manuals from just downloaded kind of generally. So this is a manual. So let me just show you the manual, just so you know that it's not a. If I get a Samsung TV, so this will be a manual like for any of the products that you would expect. It has all the usual images and tables and stuff in there. So a normal manual that a human would use. So if I go back to here, I've added this PDF in, and I'm going to go ahead and create my knowledge base. So this will take a few minutes where it goes and does all of its magic and extracts kind of information out. What we'll do, just in the interest of time, is we won't wait for it, because it will probably take a minute or so. If I go ahead and look at my knowledge bases, you'll see one that I created this morning. If I look at Samsung manual, then actually that's the same PDF in this case, and it's extracted, pages of kind of information around, securing the TV to the wall and so on. So one of the things you can interactively do in the portal, so I've gone ahead and done this, so I can ask a question like, how do I put my TV on the wall or something, put my TV on the wall. So this is just a PDF. It's brought this information in. And again, I haven't said secure my TV to the wall. I've said put my TV to the wall. And it's gone ahead and actually done a really good job at extracting out that kind of section actually in that PDF manual. Now, it's not always going to get it right every single time. So actually, one of the really cool things, if you hit inspect, it's showing you the most appropriate answer that it thinks is relevant here. But it will also show you a confidence score. but it's also giving you other ideas. So actually interactively you can go, actually no, you've got that wrong, this is the answer. So you can see it's interactively changing. So you're just giving a little bit of a nudge, it's brought data in, it may not get it 100% right. So again, you can go ahead and kind of nudge that, publish it, and away you go. So this is quite a nice kind of tool there. So with manuals, I would definitely encourage you, for where you've used it before and it hasn't quite worked properly, is definitely give it kind of another look. One of the things I want to give you line of sight of, so this is not something you have to go and use right now today, but to give you perspective of what the team have been working on, is kind of great, we can extract out to intents and entities and so on, but could be one of the common requests is, how do we pull the images out of the document? So in the bot conversation, if you're guiding through changing the bulb on your car, for example, how can you pull out the text and the image and give that to the conversation to actually go and show? So this little kind of internal tool is quite cool. So it's taken, in this case, a car manual, but it could be the TV manual as well. Let me just find where my mouse has gone. There it is. So you can actually see in here, it's actually extracted a lot of structural information in this document, you know, climate control, hints, manual air distribution. So you can see this is the structure that Q&A Maker under the covers is actually extracting. You can also see this pulling out entities like wheel, footwell, windows, upper, you know, all, a bunch of these entities, which all helps with a bot being able to go and find the information here. So entities, as you would expect, QA pairs, which is obviously what Q&A Maker is showing to you today, but also give you a bit of a sense of some of the things that are kind of coming through, is that there is a section here that's got a fairly broad set of information. So it's actually, we're starting to explore the ability to automatically have a dialogue and say, well, I don't quite understand, I've got like four bits of information, which one do you want? So you can see here, it's actually showing you about general information, switching between letters and numbers and without the navigation system and so on. So you can start to see we're understanding the structure of the document. So we're reading it in a bit more kind of common sense. Another case here is table extraction. So actually you can see here we're actually identifying tables in the document and that metadata and returning it out. So you don't have access to this kind of quite yet today, but you can see where we're going with Q&A Maker of tables and images and so on. So you should see kind of further kind of improvements in this space. So from a Q&A Maker kind of point of view, any good bot experience to go back on the best practice, it should be able to do things, complete tasks for me, but it should have some more general knowledge to help kind of satisfy that user's question. And Q&A Maker is a great way of kind of quite quickly adding that extra knowledge to your assistant. So just very quickly talk about the dispatcher. There's some good kind of documentation on this today. So you saw me create a dispatch model before. So I took my multiple Lewis models, I took my Q&A Maker data, and I'm able to evaluate and understand where there's ambiguity or kind of duplication, so I can improve the quality. But you can also take that resulting model and actually push a question coming into your bot into the dispatcher model, and it will evaluate which of your N Lewis models you should actually route that to. So if you're going to break your bot up into lots of different components and things, then this is a great way of routing it to the right component and knowing that it will work reliably. It will then help you route it to Q&A Maker or to to the Lewis model. So actually on some of our more complex kind of bot engagements that we've done, where a customer had lots of different Lewis models for different products and so on, actually figuring out with the bot framework today, you're calling each Lewis model and getting the score and trying to compare scores and go, is 0.29 better than 0.39 in this model, is very, very brittle. Because as you retrain the model, then the scores go up and down over time. So you end up with this kind of not great experience around things going down the wrong route. So the dispatcher kind of addresses this. So this is kind of in preview, the bits are up there, and we're continuing to look at this. But I think from our perspective, this is going to be a core architectural component kind of moving forward. With that, pass over to Jason.
Super, thanks, Darren.
Thanks for having me. My name is Jason Williams. I'm with Microsoft Research AI. I've been working on machine learning approaches to conversational systems for almost 20 years or so. And I'm really happy to tell you today about Project Conversation Learner. Conversation Learner is an AI-first way of building a task-oriented bot or a task-oriented conversational interface. At the core of the approach, the heart of the approach, is a recurrent neural network that we train on your behalf for your domain. It takes all of the dialogue history of this conversation seen so far as input, and then directly predicts which action to take next. That allows it to learn directly from example conversations in your domain, and that in turn allows designers, business owners, and domain experts to directly express what they would like the bot to do in a very accessible way. At the same time, this approach is fully situated in code, so it's possible to have API calls that invoke functionality in your domain, so for example, to print a train ticket. It's also possible to add constraints that limit which actions are available. So for example, if you're building a banking system and you want to have a constraint that says only users that are logged in are allowed to transfer funds, you can express that as a hard constraint that's not appropriate to learn as a machine learning relationship. The overall approach here is to code what it's easy to code, and to learn what it makes sense to learn. And I'll give you an example of how we can put this together in just a second. But before I do that, I'll explain the workflow. Because when you get started, there are no example conversations to train from. You have to create those. You have a cold start problem. So to get started, the developer starts off by playing the role of the user. So they type in examples of what they think the user might say. Then using our UI, they interactively make corrections to what the bot is doing. And after they do this for some small number of dialogues, they get the system working to sort of a good enough level of performance that they can put it in front of some early users. Those users interact with the bot. And then again, using the UI, the developer can then go and make corrections in the space of the example. So they can look at places where the bot took action A and say, no, you should have taken action B instead. And those immediately become training examples. And we constantly are retraining this neural network. So this workflow lets you get from nothing to something to good, all the while improving the same machine learning model. So I'm going to spend most of my time here on giving you a quick demo of this. So this is an example in the password reset domain. And here I have three training examples, three training dialogues that I've populated here so far. Here's what these look like. So here's an example where the user started by saying, I forgot my password. Then this was the system's response. Then the user said, local account, and so on. And just to emphasize, when the system is predicting this last action here, how to reset password on Windows 10, this machine learning model has sight of all of the preceding context. So if there's something that happened early on in the dialogue that's important for that decision, the machine learning model is able to see that. It's able to use that information. The actions, by the way, are drawn from templates that you design. We're not generating word by word. There's not a risk that we'll go off brand or we'll say something completely unexpected. You have control over what the bot says. Let me show you how the interactive teaching process works. So let's say that now I'm the developer. I'm going to also play the part of the user here because I'm just getting started. So I'm going to say, I lost my password. And now what we'll see are the predictions of the neural network. So this is just on these three training examples it's seen so far. They're sorted by score. This is its best prediction. And that's right. That's what I want it to do. So that's good. I'll have it go ahead and take that. And I'll say this is for my local account. And here you can see it says, which version of Windows do you have? And again, that's what I want it to do. And now I'll explore a path it hasn't seen before. So let's imagine if the user says Windows 7. So here, if I look through here, there is no good action at this point. That's fine. At any point, I can add more actions. So now I'll add a new response that the bot can say. This could also be rich content. Actions can also include cards, links, and so on. So I'll go ahead and say done teaching. And every time that I add another example in the background, we go off, we retrain the neural network. And there you can see that now that network is updated with that most recent training example. So now all the future predictions will have the benefit of that. So I can continue this process and add some more. Instead, I'm going to switch over and show you what an end user would see. So this is the web chat control. We just make this easy to access in our UI. This is the same web chat control that you could use to embed in your web page. And now let's imagine that the user says, I forgot my password. So this is now the end user interface. Let's say that's for my Microsoft account. So far, so good. Now, if you've ever deployed a bot, you know that users are going to say things that you hadn't expected. And they're going to say things in ways you hadn't expected. So let's say the user says something here like, thanks. You can see, OK, our bot didn't do the right thing. OK, we'll hold that thought for a second, because that's one sort of modest case. There are then the more extreme cases. Maybe users come along, and they don't even know what this bot can do. And they type in something like restaurants. Well, I don't have a good response to that. So that's fine. This is good data. The key is, how do we learn from that data quickly? So here, now I'm going to go back to being the developer. Here are logs of those conversations that just occurred. So I can look at this conversation as the developer, and I can say, OK, my user said restaurants. I don't know why, but that's not the right response. Let me click on that, and let me choose what the bot should have done. You know, none of these are right. I actually have to add another response. Let's say, sorry, I can't help with that. So that will add that to the catalog of responses. I can then choose that and say, that's what you should have done. That creates a new training example. I could continue that training example here if I wanted to. I'm just going to go ahead and save that. Here are a couple of other logs that I did before I came up on stage. Here's a user who said driving directions. Well, that's not right. I want to use that, sorry, I can't help with that response there. Let's go ahead and save that. And now these two, let's have a look at these. So here's one. The user at the end here says, thank you. Everything before this was right, but this thank you is not right. I want to add one more response here. Let's have the system say, you're welcome there. There we go. And then this last one, this is the one I just did. Here my user said, thanks. Yeah, let's end that with you're welcome as well. Great. So the point of showing you this is to illustrate how quickly you can iterate and improve the bot by looking at these examples and by choosing the response that the bot should have taken. And again, in the background, we're constantly retraining the model. And so here now, I'm going to explore through and see if we've learned some of those new behaviors. There's a very small number of training examples in here, so your expectations should be pretty low. Let's say if a user came along and said web search. Now, it hasn't seen this language before, but I have a hope of getting this right, and it does, and I'll explain why. So in here, there's also a word embedding model that gives this, it's trained on hundreds of millions of web pages, that gives the model an inbuilt understanding of synonymy. So it can begin to learn boundaries between classes. So here it has a class of everything that's outside of password reset, everything that's inside. It doesn't know that boundary perfectly yet. It's not super confident. But you can see that it's beginning to get the right idea. So now let me continue here. Let's say that I say, I lost my password. So now I'm still in this same conversation. Is that for your local account or Microsoft account? So here I'm getting back on track, even though I've never seen this particular flow before. Let's say that's for my local account. Which version of Windows do you have? Let's say Windows 8. So again, this is a flow that we haven't seen in its entirety before. And at the end, after this Windows 8, we've never seen a user say thanks before. And let's see if I press my luck here, we can get that right as well. So notice I didn't have to go in and code all the different paths. I didn't have to create a whole flow chart and specify exhaustively what happens everywhere. Because machine learning is able to look at fragments of conversations it's seen before and infer paths that ought to make sense. And if it ever gets the wrong path, then you can go in and you can add another label. Okay, so let me switch over just a second and very briefly show you a little bit more of the depth of the tool. This has just illustrated the ability to ingest text and to choose responses. There's a fair amount more here. So I'll switch to a different task as well, which is ordering pizzas. And here I can add entities. So entities are passages, short mentions in text that have a type that you define. So for example, toppings on a pizza. And in our tool, entities can also be text that gets inserted into actions that the system outputs. So entities are also can also be programmatic. There's a collection of actions here. And what's interesting is we can embed entities in actions. So for example, you have $ toppings on your pizza. And we can also express relationships between actions and entities. And finally, we can have API calls, and we can also have cards. So let me just quickly show you kind of an example of one of these training examples and how some of those concepts work. So here's a place where the user said peppers and sausage as toppings they want on their pizza. We can label those here, and when we label them, they come into the bot's memory. And you have programmatic access to this memory, too. So in addition to recognizing things from users, you can be manipulating this however you want to. There's a series of callbacks. Let's see, we also have API calls. So this, your order is on its way, is an example of an API that exists in my bot. And finally here, you can see here's an example of a card. So this is an action where I wanted to kind of guide the user toward choosing yes or no.
Jason, can people use this today?
So I'm glad you asked, Chris. So this is available today as a Labs cognitive service by invitation. You can go to the page here and request an invitation. And we're going to be taking people on progressively. We're really looking forward to your feedback. We're delighted to see what you can build. And we'd love to hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's look at one more service. It's hard to top Jason's. But one more service that you might really like, for those of you building bots, is called Personality Chat. And this is another Labs cognitive services that you can start using with today. And what this is a means of adding kind of basic thank you, you're welcome, with personality to your bot. So this works with the V4 SDK. Here's an example of middleware being added. And you can see right there, when you're creating your bot, you add in the Personality Chat middleware. You can set some options. If you have custom responses, you can drive these from a file. And the way this works is there are three personalities out of the box. And you can type something in, hello, how are you, thank you, and it will give you the basic kind of conversational responses around that. These are editable. There are three different personalities to pick from. I'll show those in just a second. And it's just a way of adding a little bit of the basic things to your bot to make things feel a little bit more real. So let's do a live demo of that. So here we are. This is live. This is on the Cognitive Services Lab page. They've embedded this little web chat control there. And if I just walk up to this thing, you can see here this is just their normal website, and type in hello. And there's a whole set of things that they do document every single thing that they respond with. So, hello, how can I help you? That's a nice professional response. If we drop that down to humorous and type that again, maybe I can just say yo. It's going to come back with something else. Yeah. So, you can drive all this from a file. This is all documented. It's all gleaned from these responses, request response pairs. You can play with them. You can do all kinds of different things with them. And you just add them, as I said, very quickly through that middleware infrastructure. So the team members who wrote that are around today. Stop by our booths and you can talk with them and see how you can add that to your own bot. And other than that, I wanted to talk about support for a moment. One of the things that we offer as part of the Microsoft Bot Framework is we have free support through Stack Overflow and GitHub. So as you're encountering problems, as things are happening, as a particular adaptive card is not rendering right on Teams, or an action that you requested isn't working right in Skype, You can go to Stack Overflow and post and tag your stuff with Bot Framework. We have a team of people who will work with that every day, and their SLAs are quite good around getting responses. We don't charge for that at all. If you do want a more professional SLA-based approach, we do also work with, of course, the Azure Professional Support Infrastructure. So we have an ecosystem to help support you building your bots. So a lot of the little nitty-gritty details of my adaptive card worked here, it didn't work there, I couldn't register a channel, I didn't get the callbacks. We can help with that. So if you get stuck, please reach out. Stack Overflow is a great place for that, so is GitHub. With that, you can go ahead and go to github.com Microsoft Bot Builder. That's where our SDKs and our open source footprint really starts. We have this nice AKAMS site. You can go there. I see everyone with their phones taking a picture. I'll leave that up for a moment. And lastly, I will highly recommend Elaine Chang and Vishwak at 2:45 today are giving you best practices for building bots. They're going to dive very deeply into a lot of that tooling that we showed. They're going to go through, for example, Vishwak and the SDK v4. We'll take you from the Echo bot that I showed you. He'll add prompts. He'll add single-turn dialogues. He'll add multi-turn dialogues. He's going to add cards to that. He's going to show you how to use all of our date-time infrastructure, which is amazing in terms of date-time resolutions and constraints and natural language around that, both in and out. So I would strongly recommend that talk later today. Otherwise, if you have questions, I think myself, Darren, and Jason can hang around up here, come up, because I know we're out of time. We'll be here for a bit. We'll be in the booth as well. Please feel free to stop by and say hello. Happy to answer questions. With that, thank you, everyone, for coming. We really appreciate your time, and have a wonderful day.